Hello, cyclocross friends, and welcome to episode 147 of Cyclocross Radio. On today's show, it's Zach Schuster, editor from Cyclocross Magazine, who's been a guest on the show before, a regular contributor to Cyclocross Radio, and it's always good to catch up with Zach, and I wanted to talk to him because I've just, ever since the calendar for this year's domestic for U.S. cyclocross season came out and started to come together and races, many of which were C1s or now C2s, and other races which were on the calendar or off the calendar, just sort of wondered what this season is going to look like. And to be honest, been doing some hand-wringing over what this season is going to look like and how it's going to play out and where the top riders will go. And Zach is always a great person to bounce these ideas off of. So that's what we did. You know, I mean, a lot of the things that we talk about in this episode, you may not agree with, or you may be feel like we got wrong. And it's just kind of part of the process. We're just talking through it. I may completely change my mind on how things are going once we are in Roanoke for GoCross, which is the first UCI race in the U.S., which I hope all of you will go to. And then it could just be smooth sailing from there. But just looking at the calendar, it definitely looks different than it did in the past. And that's what we're here to talk about. So that's coming up. Before we get to that, I quickly want to tell you about Health IQ, which is a sponsor and partner of the Wide Angle Podium Network. And I would love for you to go to healthiq.com/WAP, learn more about life insurance. I know what my demographics are, and I know a lot of you are in that zone where this is something you need to be looking at. And the nice thing is that since also in the demographics are people who live a healthy lifestyle. So if you live that healthy lifestyle, if you ride your bike, you can give those stats, you can give that data to Health IQ, and you will get lower rates for it. So go to healthiq.com/WAP. Take the short quiz they got. You're going to do awesome on it, and then you will be qualified, and you can go from there, and it helps the network. And when I'm talking about the network, I am talking about the Wide Angle Podium Podcast Network. We are doing some awesome stuff over there. We just started a new feed called The Parts Bin, and that's where we're trying out new shows. So Scotty D from Bike Shop CX, who you all love, huge into vinyl. And he, him and Dan from Grimpier Coffee got together, and they put together this show this week that is all about vinyl. You're going to love it. Check out that. And then Zach and I also did another show about gravel racing called Grodeo. Check that one out too. It is in the parts bin, and check out everything at Wide Angle Podium. Become a member. If you want something for your eyes, get over to YouTube, watch the heat check videos I've been putting out for MTB on the CX Hairs channel on YouTube. We're going to be doing those for Cyclocross too. We're building out a show. I think it's going to be pretty cool, but this is a good precursor so you know what you're going to get. All right, I gave myself 3 minutes to do this. This is right over 3 minutes. We're going to get to the show, Zach Schuster, and we're doing that right now. Zach Schuster. Or the Shoe Star Schuster. That's what I was supposed to say. Zach the Shoe Star Schuster. How's it going, man?
I'm doing very well, Bill. I've missed you. The last time we saw each other, we were in a car in Denmark in the middle of the night driving around talking about Cyclocross World. So it's good to reconnect.
Yeah, for sure. That was a crazy night, but a good weekend. That was fun. It's interesting the places that we find each other. I mean, we've done Trailside on ATV and snowmobile tracks in a hotel after Pan Am's up in Canada. Did a show there, right? And then in a barn in Iowa, and then on the roads of a very, very dark Denmark. So I think that as far as guests that I've had on this show, you and I have had the most diverse locales.
I know. Well, I'm looking forward to, I know we were joking on Instagram with Bruce Buckley, our guest at Pan Am, so talking about where we'll end up this coming season. So I'm actually excited to see where we end up making the Cyclocross Media Room this coming season.
Yeah. Who knows? Who knows where it's going to be? And which kind of leads right into the main topic that we got here. Who knows what it's going to be? And I say that in regards to the to the U.S. cyclocross calendar. I know people are, you know, may not be ready to talk about cyclocross yet, but I wanted to sort of have you on because I know you and I both are kind of scouting out that calendar as soon as it comes out, even if it's not necessarily 100% correct. And there are definitely some things that we need to talk about and some head scratchers going on with U.S. cyclocross this year.
Yeah, for sure. It was unfortunate to see we wrote a story. I think you might have pointed to it, and then we kind of wrote a story about it in terms of what was going to happen with the C1s when the UCI said they were going to enforce their rules about international riders, and it turns out they did. Was that kind of the first topic that you were thinking of discussing here?
Yeah, for sure. And the thing that was interesting about that, derogation was the word that we kept hearing, derogation, meaning that they had, you know, if you talk to the pedantic folks out there, they will tell you, well, this rule has been on the books for years. It just wasn't enforced. And that's fine. I mean, we've seen rules that the UCI has done that with, you know, in the past as well. You know, there was never really a rule about changing bikes in the pits. And then they had just created this rule about like hopping on and hopping back, you know, hopping off and hopping on your bike. And then that was okay. And then somebody complained and then all of a sudden it wasn't okay. You know, so I mean, they can be a little loose with the rules, but for whatever reason, they decided this was going to be the year that they were going to strictly enforce the minimum number of international riders that had to be at a C1 and the minimum numbers of nations that had to be represented in a C1. And the thing that wasn't necessarily fair was that they sort of made this proclamation after some of the C1s had already happened and before the others really could get their ducks in a row. So everybody thought that it was going to be, hey, we're doing this. You have, that's the derogation part. You have this year to figure it out, meaning 2019 and then 2020. If you all haven't met the requirements, you're getting knocked down to a C2. And that's, I mean, from the federation to promoters to people on the UCI committee, that's what I heard the whole time. And then it turns out that was not the case.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what I expected, and that kind of seems fair. I mean, in a way, because they hadn't chosen to enforce it, it seems like you should get at least a one-year leeway, which is really probably not even enough to try to figure out how you're going to solve it, but it would at least be, you know, 1 year to try to get, as you would say, your ducks in a row about how to recruit, whether it be international riders or make sure that you get the international riders who are living in the U.S. to come to your races or whatever. But yeah, so we're left with what, four, potentially three C1s this coming season?
No, just three.
It's just three?
Three are on the calendar. So otherwise, if you look at usacycling.org, national calendars, Pro CX, Reno's not on here.
Oh, okay. So it's down to three.
So that means that the C1 season, and Zach, you know, we used to always have the sort of de facto national series that everybody wanted that would just come down to, well, you know, the best riders should at least show up to the C1s. And at some point, this was six races, seven races throughout the season, all the way down to Ruts and Guts, you know, late in the season coming up on nationals. As it stands right now, the C1 calendar ends before many people would say cyclocross season even begins. October 26th, Cincy, that is the last C1.
Yeah, although to be fair, I think last season it seems like most of the big races were before Pan Ams. And I mean, I guess maybe that would be a thing to talk about here as well. But, you know, we have a very front-loaded calendar where, you know, they came hot and heavy in October. And then, you know, which one was NBX? Was NBX a C1 this past
NBX
season?
NBX was a C1. It's back down to a C2 for this year. And it's also moved way down into the calendar, which we can get to.
Yeah, well, I guess we lost Ruts and Guts, too, because Ruts and Guts was a C1.
That was the one. Yeah, that was like the last big one.
Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, that was always the thing too, is that it was always this top heavy calendar, and it was really noticeable when Nationals were in January, because it just was, seemed like this post Thanksgiving or even before that lull, and then everything ramped back up again in December for a little while, and then everybody went to Tucson or Athens to train, and then they raced Nationals, and then they went to Europe. So it was sort of this bifurcated cyclocross season. So that doesn't exist anymore. But I think what you and I, our job for cyclocross, U.S. Cyclocross Nation, is to figure out what is the calendar, what is the story, what is it that people can follow this year, if that's possible.
Yeah, and I want to touch on a point you made about the C1s being the de facto series. Is even in interviews this past season, riders talked about it. They were like, look, C1s, we're bringing it. And so that was one of my first reactions, was like, we're losing this. This is the closest thing we have to a series. And so that's a major thing that we need to address. Because like you said, at least for the most part, it seems like in the U.S., we have the East Coast series and we have the West Coast series, which I think is fine because we're a huge country. But the C1s at least brought some of the West Coast folks to the East Coast, because I guess they were mostly on the East Coast, to create, you know, that situation where you got the best riders in one place. So I think that's kind of what you're hinting at, huh? Is how do we tell that story, and are the riders going to be in the best, in the same place at the same time this coming season?
Yeah, and I think that we start off strong. So I mean, let's look how we start off. I'm hoping that everyone who wants to, you know, we have 16 spots available at the World Cups for the U.S. still. I'm hoping that those who are in that position or are looking at high placings and high positioning for World Cups and also for Rochester will show up at Go Cross. That has become our opening day for UCI racing in the U.S. There's the only conflict that, and it is a big conflict, it was a big conflict for me. I had to sort of make a decision between, you know, Go Cross and Mountain Bike World Championships, which are in North America, and Mount St. Anne. Those are on the same weekend. But that's affecting some people, but not a ton of people. You know, the other thing that Roanoke runs into that time of the year is a lot of people don't want to go there because it's super hot. You know, it's in Virginia in the end of August, beginning of September. But regardless, I really think that this year, even more than last year, and sort of on the strength of what they did last year, this is going to be a much bigger kickoff race. So we're going to start off strong there.
Well, and it seems too that the paradigm about the season has kind of shifted with the U.S. World Cups, because you talk to literally every athlete, and not a single one is going to say, yeah, I'm just blown off the U.S. World Cups. Like, they're like, no, that's a major target. And so I think even though I believe the first day is literally in August this coming year on the 30, August has 31 31st, days.
Yep.
August has 31.
Yep.
That's right. I'm smart. I think you're seeing where they really want to ramp up quickly to be on good form for those World Cups. And I mean, I guess you were there. It seemed like an awesome event. It really did, and it seemed like there was great racing there too.
They do a really nice job. They want to promote it well. They want to invest in the race, and I think their registration is already open, and they're looking to sort of build on what they've done in the past. And I think they do a great job. You know, and it had a good, Kerry Werner and Beck were there. Tobin showed up for that race. Cody was there. So it had a good, like, sort of national feel to it just from the beginning. So that should be it. And then from there, we move to Rochester, which is the first big test. And Rochester this year, I think, is going to have some international flair to it. I don't think that they will have any problem meeting those requirements. From what I understand, they're going to have, you know, possibly some Belgians and Dutch and Swiss and other people who are coming over for the World Cups, who are going to be at Jingle Cross the next week, are going to start out and try to pick up the points and just sort of get their racing feet in America at Rochester. So that should be a really neat one. And, you know, and it sort of goes along with it. We are, as much as we want to sort of doom and gloom what may be coming up, we are starting off really strong in this season.
Yeah, and I think Rochester is, to me, has always been fun because, one, I guess Hyde called it the first day of class this past season, which wasn't apt. But maybe he'll be at Go-Cross. Maybe it won't be the first day of class. But, you know, and then in recent years, they've gotten to the point where they've all gotten together, especially on the men's side. But I'm guessing it's the same on the women's, where they're like, look, we've got the World Cups literally in a week or two. We can't just joke around. We're not going to sit in. And so, I mean, it was like drag it out, smash mouth racing there last year.
Yeah.
And so hopefully it'll be like that on both sides. I mean, there were two great battles between Magali and Ellen on the women's side. And then the men was just, oh, man, you know, huge groups of guys and they were all throwing attacks at each other. So, yeah, like you said, it will not only be like have the international flair, but I think we'll also see really good racing, which is, I guess, what you and I, we'd like to see.
Yeah, and I think you're exactly right in what happened with that one, since it's a C1, C2 weekend. The C1, I think, was a more tactical race. There are a lot more points on hand for that one. You don't want to just blow up putting in these crazy attacks and then not, you know, place up there. And then it really was the agreement, and you're right, it started with Hyde, where it was like, we need to just bash each other's heads in, because next week we're going to be racing against, you know, Wout Van Aert, and he's not going to wait around for us. So we should probably get in a fast effort while we're all here and together. And what that whole concept really brings up a huge point that I think we need to get back to in the U.S., and this is kind of on the shoulders of the athletes, that especially without any C1s, it's going to be up to them to figure out what the national calendar is going to look like. And this used to happen. There used to be I think it was even a listserv group of, you know, Tim Johnson and Jeremy Powers and Ryan Trebone and Jamie Driscoll and all of these top guys 10, 12 years ago. And they would get together and they say, okay, we want to race in Europe. We want to do well. We need to race against the highest competition. We have some, you know, races that are going up against each other. We have rest weeks here and there. What are we going to do? What races are we going to go to? Let's make sure that we're all at the same races. I think since that core group left cyclocross, that hasn't happened anymore. And it turned into, and especially with the more C1s, like at that point, everybody was fighting just for a single point. You know, with more C1s out there, more opportunities, I think it became more saturated, and we didn't get that, or more diluted, and we didn't get that concentration of racers that had people who had a vested interest in getting everyone together. That sort of fell to the wayside. My hope is that without as many points on hand anymore, that starts to come back.
But I guess as a counterpoint that I was thinking about that, you know, if the calendar is a bit more fractured, wouldn't there also be a benefit to athletes to go where they have the highest chance of getting points? wouldn't it be kind of in their best interest to not get the best talent in the same place in a way?
Here's my question for you, Zach.
Okay.
For this year, especially with no C1s, especially with we got Katie Keogh's going to Europe. We have the people who are going to go to Europe. There's so many more C2s that getting points from them. No one's going to show up unless they do really well in the World Cups, do well at Rochester. No one's showing up for these European World Cups on the front row for the U.S. I think that that's the thing that possibly the UCI was trying to avoid, and I think that this year successfully does it. So if we take that small percentage of people who still really are concerned about those points and take them out of the equation, my question for you is, why do points matter?
That's a good question. Well, nationals for one.
Sure. Okay. Nationals.
Nationals is definitely a big one, and Pan Ams. Those are two races that are super important.
Are you going to spend your whole year sort of avoiding other people so that, and maybe you will, but it just, man, I don't know. I just wish at this point, if we don't have, you know, and again, without the C1s, it's a lot less money is on the line this year. There's a lot less prize money, about half, not even half, a fraction of the prize money from C1 down to C2. And you and I aren't the people to answer these questions, because we just ask the other people this stuff. But it's really my biggest question. It's like, what are you racing for at this point? What's the goal? Not everybody can win nationals. You know, on the women's side, one person has won for the last 13 years. So not everybody can win. So what's the goal? Yeah.
No, that's a good question. I mean, I was thinking about that myself in terms of, you know, not having, at least with the series, there was some kind of narrative. And even last year, you know, there's a bunch of races. There's some that kind of meant a little bit more than each other. But, you know, there was kind of like Pan Ams on the calendar, domestically, Pan Ams and Nationals. But then other than that, you know, what was the narrative of the season? And I think it was a little bit easier from my standpoint when there was the U.S. Cup CX, that was a very definitive thing that made it much easier to tell that story.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it sounds like we may have to, we did a little bit of quote-unquote journalism on this question of what the season is going to look like, but it sounds like you just raised another question that we need to get on the horn and see what some of the athletes think, because I'm sure that they definitely have opinions about it.
Yeah, and it's the kind of thing also, it's like everybody talks about, you know, it's such a circular thing. You're like, okay, you want a national series. One of the reasons you want a national series is so that everybody's in the same place. And then that also is much easier for sponsors and for media to tell a story. I mean, that's what we love. That's why I created what I'm doing for mountain biking with this whole heat check series and bringing back the things that Behind the Barriers and Colt McElwain, even before that, when he was with Cycling Dirt started, you know, who's number one? He'd have a top 10 ranking every week. And that even just was like, damn be the racers, we're going to create our own narrative in the media. And I think that is something that has been lost, and it doesn't necessarily have to be me, or, you know, it could be anybody out there. I'm trying to do it, but that is, I think we can sort of force these people into a narrative, at least I hope. And I hope, but what that means is that there has to be some buy-in from those sponsors, from the races, from the athletes, that whatever it is we're going to do, we all have to be on some same page. Because my fear is now with all of these C2 races, which are, I mean, I run one of them. It has a ton of people. It's still a regional race. These are not, you know, these aren't necessarily national races. C1's national races, C2, a lot smaller. We got to be able to tell a story. And that's why I'm hoping that we can create something. But to do it, you got to have the buy-in of everyone. And that's not always the easiest thing.
Yeah, well, I was going to tongue-in-cheek mention Heat Check for this coming season. But yeah, no, I think that kind of approach where people are following what's going on and who's racing well. But yeah, I think you're right. I think if anything's clear from, you know, doing some reporting on this and talking to promoters and kind of coming to grips with what is going to happen with the UCI, is that we do need to kind of all be on the same page. And I think you've been great about at least starting those discussions. I think you have a voice that people listen to. I mean, obviously, in our position, it's a little bit tougher because, you know, we take more of a news approach and reporting what's going on.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're right. I think, like, us in the media have an obligation to kind of do that, because it's one of those things. I think you're exactly right. Like, we need to find a way to create interest in domestic racing when there is no natural structure to do so. Like, the natural structure is one of blaming this and that, like it being very disparate geographically and you know, in terms of how the races are set up and stuff like that. Yeah, I mean, I would love it. I think you're great. You do that so well. Like, you're not afraid to put your voice out there. People listen to you. Yeah, I think that's great. I think it's an awesome idea, and it's one that we definitely need.
Well, yeah, and as I said, it's just an idea, but it's the type of thing that I think can at least garner interest without, be it either, as I said, the heat check idea or something else, that doesn't necessarily mean we need, a white knight to ride in here with $200,000 and say cyclocross, because I don't think that's happening. I just don't. But let's get back and try to see, like, if you and I, and this is, you know, we love all the races, but, you know, if you and I were to see what we could do as far as to make a coherent season, I do think, just because it's the only show in town, other than, you know, everybody will be able to watch the World Championships on the UCI channel with VPN, because it's not going to be on Red Bull TV. The Go Cross is a great place to start. I think that is somewhere that could be a really good kickoff to the season. You know, take a page out of mountain bikes preparation and invest in an ice vest and wear that to the starting line, and then you'll be fine for the hour. But I think if we start there, we could get everyone on the East Coast and do a Virginia to Rochester stint. And I think that we would, it'd be a really going into the World Cups. I mean, and as you said, this first half of the season is easy and it looks awesome. You know, you can go Roanoke, Rochester, Iowa, Wisconsin. And that's pretty cool.
The first 4 weeks are pretty cut and dry, like what you're going to do versus the rest of the schedule. I think that's where our work is going to get a little bit tougher. And I mean, last year, Rochester 2 had a live stream and it wasn't half bad. It was actually pretty good. Like, that was pretty cool. I mean, I got to sit at home and I watched both races all weekend and it was awesome. So, I mean, I think there's that too, with the opportunity to have the much coveted live stream. It's one of the few races that's making it happen.
Well, I can tell you this year, it's going to have an extended cyclocross TV episode instead.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, anyway, it was great.
It was. And we'll have live streams coming up for the World Cups on the week after that.
Okay. Sorry. Well, anyway, last year it was great. I really enjoyed that.
Coming up after, so we get through that, it's kind of easy. And you're right. I mean, accessible, that there's going to be a lot of media. There's going to be a lot of visibility on those races. And then our first kind of divergent week is a really interesting one, because it has a race, Gloucester, that is, I mean, it's no longer KMC. It's now Craft Sportswear Grand Prix of Gloucester, that looks like it's back in Gloucester. I don't know if that's what it says on the calendar. Do you know anything about that? I heard there were rumors that. Oh, I'm thinking of KMC. I'm completely screwed up on this. Yeah. So we have Gloucester, and then we have Ozcross, which are up against each other. And this is going to be a really interesting decision. Maybe not this year, but going forward, I'm pretty sure that Ozcross is going to be a C1. They kind of have to be, right?
Next year.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was kind of asking about, like, when I interviewed the race director, the guy from NWA.
Yep.
You know, he was talking kind of about the progression. You do a C2, you do a C1, you do a World Cup, you do Worlds. And I was like, so when are you doing a World Cup?
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, yeah, we didn't really, you know,
they
he was
sort
like,
of skipped we're that not gonna... one.
Well, he was like, you know, he's like, I went to Jingle Cross. I love it. Waterloo. So I think that makes sense. It does seem like they're going to have to at least step up another level going into the World Championships. That would make a lot of sense. And I think it's part of their ambition. I mean, they really, really, really want to put on a great event at the World Championships. And so I would see that. Brooke Watts is the race director. He's known for putting in what he calls it, elbow grease, doing work. And so I imagine that he'll be, you know, recruiting riders to get to that event to put on a good show this year.
Yeah, and recruiting riders to make sure that they have that international requirement for them to be a C1, if that in fact is the direction that they want to go. And I think that, I mean, just you know, you've talked to not only Brooke, but the people in Arkansas who are behind that and just that whole community. I think that they don't mind shooting for the stars. So seeing that they C1 seems like easy for them. And then I do think that they would love to be a World Cup. And we may see that if either Trek or Jingle isn't around or even if there's three World Cups in the U.S., which would not be unreasonable. I think that would actually be, I think a lot of the European riders would like that. You know, you talk to Vanderpool and he's already like, it's not enough for me to go there just 2 weeks of racing. So you add a third World Cup and I think that's a lot more incentive and it's a lot more, even for somebody of his caliber, it's a bigger bite if he's going to try to win the World Cup if he's missing three as opposed to just two and then wins, you know, runs the table on the rest. That's even more. So I could see them eventually vying for a World Cup. I could see them vying for nationals. I mean, you know, I think that Arkansas is really here to stay as far as cyclocross, and it's only going to build.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think one thing that's, I guess, then interesting about that weekend is it seems like we see regional splits in terms of which where riders go.
Yeah, and as long as I'm not confused really, like, about Providence and Gloucester anymore, yeah.
So there's not really a West Coast race, but at the same time, like if you're say a Midwest rider, like both are kind of equidistant. So which one do you choose? Which is kind of unfortunate. It seems like one of the byproducts of this is like C2s are going to kind of be competing with one another in a way.
And that's what we have coming up. And that's what I think is, you know, you talked about being an East Coast and West Coast series and maybe that's the answer. And then maybe you have like, you know, the World Series at the end. I don't know. I don't know what you do, but you are exactly right. And we're coming up to it with Gloucester and Oscross going head to head. The next weekend after that, we have Colorado, the U.S. Open of cyclocross going up against Charm City. You know, one of these races that used to be a C1, now a C2. Week after that, you have Sacramento going up against DCCX. So for the next 3 weeks, we have exactly that. We have these big splits in where people are going to go. And it really comes down to the unfortunate thing, you know, and it's something that we deal with Charm City and also DCCX. We want to recruit the West Coast people. We want them to come out to our race. We think we have a great race. But at the same time, we don't want to sit there and, you know, hurt other races. So it's a really difficult situation. And this is where I think why I wanted to chat with you. This is where the hand wringing begins. Like, what happens in these races? It used to be that if it was a C1 against a C2, that wasn't as big a deal. You knew that the better riders were going to go to the C1, and that's fine. If you're a C2, you're going to put on the best show that you can. But now it's almost pitting organizers against each other.
Yeah, it really seems like it is. And I mean, I don't know if there's like a fair, equitable way to avoid that. You know, they're not putting on multiple races where you say like, hey, how about you come to my race this week, or go to his race the other weekend. But yeah, I mean, if I was an organizer, I'd already be on the phone. I'd be calling riders and be like, hey, what can I do to get you to my race? Maybe you are, I don't know.
The interesting thing is that the only saving grace I can see for at least these first couple head-to-head races, and I haven't looked at the registration numbers, but I know, for instance, like Charm City and DCCX, historically, we don't have a problem getting people. I mean, amateur racers, and that goes a long way to paying the bills. You know, we're not making any money on the UCI races, basically, that we have 1,800 people showing up to our race on the weekend makes it possible for us to be a UCI race. And I think that Sacramento does well and Colorado does well. So for those races, I don't think it's as big of an issue. I think when you start getting down, as we will, to when Major Taylor and Supercross and situations like that where they're not really that far apart and they aren't races that get a ton of registrations for the amateur classes, those are the ones that I worry about a little bit more.
So, I mean, it's almost from what you're saying that, you know, I mean, this is clearly focused on the professional UCI level. But, you know, maybe the bigger issue or the bigger deal is trying to, you know, might be an opportunity to build these events from the ground up, you know, versus relying on, hey, we're a UCI race, we're a C1 or whatever, but instead, you know, building the amateur hype, as it were.
Yeah.
And, you know, growing it that way and making sure that you have a well-attended event. And that could provide opportunities, actually, for these events down the road to be the kind of races that the, I guess, quote-unquote pros or the UCI level races want to go to. You know, like if you keep hearing about an awesome event, people usually want to be a part of that. So, I mean, I guess maybe there's an opportunity, although it would take an alternative approach from organizers and really focusing on, you know, building a great event and having a great course and getting amateurs to come to make it a thing that you can't miss.
Yeah.
Which has certainly been the case. I know here in the Midwest, like Jingle Cross, before it was World Cup, like that's what they did. Like you had to go to Jingle Cross. You know, it was a thing you didn't miss. And I think that's a big way that it built its prestige and how it eventually became a World Cup.
Yeah, for sure. Part. Yeah. And I think that, not to get off on too much of a tangent, but that's kind of one of the things that I see that is always worries me a little bit. The more that we have these World Cups, the more that they lose the specialness of it. And that people assume that it's going to be there and may not go every year now, which I think is a scary thing, because I think that once we stop supporting those, then they go away. But moving farther down, and this is interesting, Zach, because I like talking through this with you, because it's kind of a picture is starting to solidify in that we're all on the same road up through Waterloo. We're all on the same road through Waterloo. Then we take divergent roads, but it's only really for a couple weeks. And you got Gloucester on one side, Ozcross in the middle, and then it's almost like we keep moving over step by step as far as the west side goes. You go Arkansas, and then we go Colorado, and then we go Sacramento. So those people can like start in Waterloo and just sort of move their way back to California in the next 3 weeks. But after all that happens, and I don't want to talk out of school here, but I don't think HPCX is happening. I could be completely wrong, and I apologize to Tom Maines and everybody up there who puts on an amazing event, but I have a just what I've heard through the grapevine is that they're going to have to do some work to get rolling with that race. So it may not happen. I hope I am completely off base, but I think that is a possibility, which means that it really opens up the door then for everybody to reconverge for Cincinnati. And then we kind of get our picture solidified again, because we have Cincinnati. We're back to that C1 race. Hopefully people will show up for that one, and then they can all really go to Massachusetts the next week. It's the only show in town for a really rad festival. So that's like 2 weeks in a row, and then up to Pan Ams, which I know, you know, unfortunately it hurts Adam Meyerson's race, but I think that, you know, he's survived for the last 30 years with that race. He'll be fine, but it is kind of interesting. You know, I didn't in my head it didn't come back together like this, but it really does. There's about this 3 week stretch now where everybody could be in the same place.
So I guess looking at the calendar, and this touches back to a few points ago, but I've always, you know, looked at the C1s and how there seems to be usually be like an East Coast C1 and a West Coast C1. Perhaps the narrative, this could actually work out really well, having kind of like this geographic split for that 3 week period, because it's kind of like you know, how baseball used to be before interleague play,
right?
And I like, so the West Coast people, you know, looking, having Cincy down the road, having Pan Ams, they're like, all right, that's a ton of travel. I'm just stay local, race, get some racing in. So that could be good. And especially, for example, if with the power rankings, you could even split it during that period.
Yeah, for sure.
Because we won't know how people are doing up against each other. And it's, you know, Cincy has been an institution. It's a C1. Pan Ams, like, has a major race on people's schedule, like perhaps the second biggest race for most riders on their schedule. So that actually could be kind of interesting in a way of framing what's going on, is being like, what's going on during this 3-week period? They're going to get back, you know, then they get back together at Cincy, and there's this little bit of unknown about what's going to happen. So it could be good. You know, if you're looking at a way of trying to make sense of the season, that could be good. It could work.
Yeah, which... So my confusion before, I'm going to keep going back to this because I just like pointing out my mistakes about Gloucester. Where is KMC? I didn't think that was going away, but maybe it is. And it's not on the schedule.
Oh, it hasn't. I'm looking at... Oh, yeah. We noted that it's missing. It was only one day this year, and it was during Jingle Cross, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, it was during Jingle Cross, and so I think that made it a little bit tough because it was that weekend.
Is it still a UCI race?
It's not on the schedule though.
Yeah.
Is it?
So maybe it exists, but it's not UCI.
That may be the case, because last year one day was non-UCI, and it was only one day of UCI racing last year. So that could be the case.
We should probably know that, but
yeah, I know.
Figure it out. Okay. That's good to know. All right. So that sort of solves that. And I think you're absolutely right. I was looking at it as kind of this National League, American League as well. But maybe we do have interleague play. Maybe like Cincy is like interleague play. And that's...
Yeah, or it could be like the... I look at Pan Ams as being like the thing.
Right.
It seems like, you know, everyone has that circled, like all of their training is geared towards being on form and winning that race. So I don't know. I mean, maybe the narrative could be, you know, looking at Pan Ams first, because it's North American riders. It's not just U.S. riders.
Yeah.
But then clearly the focus shifts after that.
And it's, just as a side note, you know, cool, we both got that announcement a couple of days ago about junior women being included in the Pan Am race, which is pretty awesome. They're a little bit ahead of the curve as far as the rest of UCI goes. So that's a cool addition that we'll be seeing at Pan Am's this year. But you're right, that's kind of the mid-season championship, everybody heading to Pan Am, which is the same weekend as Northampton. So that's November 9th and 10th.
It's a week late this year. Pan Ams is a week late for some reason. It was a week earlier. Cause I know Adam was super bummed.
Mm-hmm.
Cause he won the jersey at Pan Ams last year, and he's not going to be able to defend it this year. So I know he was super bummed about that.
Yeah. And then after Pan Ams, we sort of go back onto our divergent paths again. And this was the one that I think is a tough one for both of these races. You have Major Taylor, which is Midwest race. And then you have Supercross Cup, which is Stony Point, New York. So really not that far apart, going against each other. And then after that race, North Carolina, they got a nice right up against Thanksgiving, November 23-24, but all alone, which is kind of cool. I know they've gone up against Ruts and Guts in the past, so that they are a solo race this year, which is really nice for them. And then, but I just wonder, with Ruts and Guts was the week after that, also the only race on the calendar, but now a C2. I'm a little worried about them, that there used to be this incentive to go to Resolution and Ruts and Guts and do that 2-week stretch, because those races are really close to each other because of the draw of the C1. But that's not there anymore. So I think that We may see, and this all comes in also to how people are training for nationals, because it's running out right up on nationals, but we may see some people sitting out some of those races. And then when we get to the end of the season, December 7th, December 8th, again, we have a split where your West Coast, Midwest people, you know, whatever's closest can either can go down to Texas for resolution, or they can go up to New England for NBX. So I think there we're definitely going to get a big split right before nationals.
Couple points. One, we have a Thanksgiving race this year. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
One of the, I actually don't know when, I think Thanksgiving is like at the end of November. So
Ruts and Guts is the weekend. So it's a 30 and December 1. So that's right after Thanksgiving is the 28th. So you have North Carolina on the weekend before Thanksgiving, and then you have Ruts and Guts right after. So that is interesting. It is a definite Thanksgiving race.
Well, and so North Carolina will be going up against Single Speed Worlds, which are coming back to the U.S. this year, albeit out on the West Coast in Utah. So side excitement for the cyclocross scene. But yeah, I think that December part is going to be really weird. This past season, there was definitely some coherence to it because you had the C1 at NBX. And so, you know, that brought nearly all the top riders out to race that one. Whether or not they were going to go out to Ruts and Guts. And Ruts and Guts is in a tough spot. Well, maybe less worse, actually, this year, since it's on the way to Nationals for everyone from out east. Last year, it was tough because you had to go, for anyone out east, you had to go out to Oklahoma and then back to Louisville. So maybe that actually could be a good thing. That might be a thing that plays in its favor, actually, is to kind of take the show on the road, go do Ruts and Guts, and then head out to Tacoma. I know it's still a really, it's still probably like a 24-hour drive from.
Except you're, I mean, if you're going to do that, you may as well go to Dallas the week after.
Oh, that's right. Oh, yeah, you're right. Sorry, I had a week off. My bad. Well, they'll go to Resolution.
It was flipped last year. That's okay. Where your confusion is. Yeah.
Okay. Well, and so maybe, I guess, yeah, you're right. Ruts and Guts will be in a tough spot, but maybe that's some incentive. That's a positive for Resolution. And if, you know, the race organizer, that's certainly a way that they could promote their race for the top riders is, you know, get one last race in. And then, although we say that, the western part of this country is huge.
Right.
Even, I mean, I'm in the Midwest, you're on the East Coast, and we're still, like, I think can't grasp how big the country is sometimes.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, not to take anything away from Tacoma, but I think we're really back to one of these races that is going to be a predominantly regional race.
Are you talking about nationals?
Nationals, yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right.
You know, I mean, if we saw it a little bit in Reno. I mean, you see it everywhere. I saw it in Hartford, right?
Hartford actually did pretty decent numbers, actually.
Yeah.
I think for, because we did a story on it. But Reno attendance number wise of all participants, well, I guess, was definitely down.
East Coast races are always going to have the numbers. I think that's kind of, it's always going to be skewed. I mean, look at Asheville was huge just because we have density, you know. we have the people. I mean, when you get to go back to Chicago for nationals, then it's going to be the same thing there. That's going to be the one that I think, you know, shoot, Chicago right in the middle, not really in the middle, more East Coast than West Coast, but I think that's going to be one of the biggest attended nationals in a long, long time.
Yeah, I think that one has a lot of potential, and I know I was really stoked about it. You can probably hear my dogs barking.
It's okay. I did the Dirtfield recordings last week, and I had a baby crying, so I'm all for the ambient sounds.
Okay. All right. Cool. Well, hopefully everyone listening is okay with it. But yeah, no, I'm stoked about Chicago, not only because of my Midwest bias, but, you know, I think you just hear it from people. Even this year locally, people looked at Louisville and were like, I can drive there. I'm going to nationals. And I think that plays a huge role for amateurs, at least. Can I drive there? Let's do it. You know, whereas I think somewhere that's tougher to get to, whether it be East Coast, West Coast, you know, depending on where you live, people, you're going to certainly get the dedicated. You're going to get those top 10s in those masters fields, but it's the 11 through whatever that are a little bit, that tend to be more regional, it seems like.
Yeah.
So, that'll definitely be an impact. But at the same time, I know everyone in Oregon is super stoked about having nationals in the Pacific Northwest. And I have a feeling that the Cross Crusades will get those USAC licenses, maybe get a few points. And I think they will. I mean, I've already, the people from out there are already telling me how excited they are.
I'm excited. I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's cool to have it back in there. When we had Bend, you know, number of years ago, but I think it's definitely a different cyclocross culture, and I think it's good for the rest of the country to see that.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think it's cool too that USAC has been doing a good job spreading them around too. We get to see different real cyclocross conditions in different parts of the country.
Yeah, and that's the, you know, and it's kind of funny, you know, the sort of the initial, of course, the internet wants to scream at something, and the initial knocks at Chicago were, what, one, it's going to be too flat, and two, it's going to be too cold. And the too cold part I just kind of laugh at, because, you know, you can't predict what it's going to be like. It could be super nice, it could be horrible. We all thought Austin was going to be 70 and sunny, and I know everybody in Austin's telling me, yelling at their computer right now, saying you're full of crap, it's never like that in the winter. But I didn't know that, and then it was 35 and raining the whole time and awful. Probably one of the more miserable nationals I've been to. You know, we had a snowstorm up in for Hartford, and then Reno, I think at some points we were all wearing shorts.
Reno's so nice.
Yeah, so, you know, it's like you don't know. And the same thing could happen in Chicago for all we know. It could be like perfectly, you know, bone dry and like 50 out there.
Well, I just looked at the weather from the past like 8 years or whatever, and it was like two or three out of the past seven or eight years, it had been 60 degrees on that date. Yeah. So you're actually just as likely to get 60 as you are like 25.
Right. And as far as the topography of that park, I know you're a lot more familiar with it than I am, but I don't care. I think that's another thing. It's like, you know, there are Belgian races that are more or less flat with a couple berms in there, and then there are ones that aren't. You know, we've had, you know, bring it back to Asheville, we've had very hilly climbers courses, and sometimes you need a flatlanders course too. I mean, I don't think that's what makes it. We're going from place to place to place for nationals. I think that Tacoma is probably going to have a lot more elevation change, and that's what you want. You want it to be something different every year. You know, we had it in Colorado, and it was at elevation, and you know, nobody wanted that except for the people in Colorado. So, you know, you're always going to get different conditions, and I think that's what makes it fun from year to year. And it turns out that in the end, the best people are still at the front of the race.
Yeah, well, I think one thing that's really interesting, I guess I'll say, about being there all week is that you get to see kind of like, it seems like each nationals kind of has this, the course has this like tenor of how races are going to play out and how things go. And so it's interesting to see all the masters races compared to what people are saying beforehand. And then to see the commentary going into the Sunday elite races where people haven't seen all that, assuming how things are going to play out. You know, and I think Reno is a big one, is that long false flat, just like shredded fields.
Yeah.
Because everyone's like, oh my God, dirt crit. Oh, this is going to be terrible. You know, and fields were just getting shredded, blown apart from the get-go. And it's like, man, this really didn't play out how everyone said it would. Now did it?
Yeah.
You know, and Hartford with the snow proved to be like just insanely hard, and no one could stay with anyone. So you never know. You really never know what's going to happen. You know, whereas at Louisville, it seemed like we saw some groups or at least a couple riders together. When you look at that course, you're like, man, this is really going to blow things up. So
yet it seemed like that track got more criticism than anything for not being changed enough and being too much of a running course. So, you know, you can never really win, but it is interesting to see, yeah, how everything changes and how the perceptions change of what we're looking at.
Hey, speaking of nationals, I guess it's not necessarily maybe to be complete as talking about how the national calendar is going to affect riders' plans with Europe.
Yes. So we already know. I mean, I think it's, and I think that this has a lot to do with how our count, how with the C2s as well. I mean, both Katie's now. I mean, Katie Compton, I believe, is going to have a similar schedule. Not going to, you know, we'll be here for the World Cups, but then head to Europe. Katie Keough is super stoked on, I talked to her at Grand Junction for a little bit, really excited with her new plan to basically spend the season in Europe. And I think that the push now for those top riders is going to be spending more and more time in Belgium and in the Netherlands racing their bikes instead of the US. And with how the calendar is shaking out, if you can afford to do that, I think it's, I almost think it's the right move. And if we, you know, if we want, you know, we want both things. We want to see our domestic pros race domestically, and we want to see our domestic pros mix it up with the Euros and have success. And we've been doing it for a lot of years, and I don't necessarily think it works out well. And I do think that if more people were to make that move and to have these extended stays in Europe, where the training is happening in Europe, so there's no extended travel, you're there, you're embedded, and you're racing, that is a better ticket for success than trying to spread yourself so thin that you're going to race a U.S. calendar and also a European calendar. And part of the argument is like, well, my sponsors want me to race in the US. I'm not even sure that's as true anymore. I just feel like the state of sponsorship is at such a nadir right now that may not even be as much of a pull either. That, like, are you getting so much money that you have to race in the US? I don't know that many riders will claim that that's the truth.
Yeah, I think for the Katies, it certainly makes sense. And I mean, Katie Compton has said as much, that she gets infinitely more TV time, you know, racing over Europe, especially with, you know, her sponsor Trek offering the live stream. But I have a good feeling that the Little Badger is going to be getting a lot of TV time as well. So it certainly works for them. And, you know, some of our other, I can definitely see, you know, Ellen, Meg Lee, some of the other riders, Rebecca, competing up at the front. But do you think the paradigm is the same for, I mean, our men definitely struggle to, say, pull a top 20 for the most part. Do you think the same paradigm still holds?
I would like to see if this next generation maybe does more of that. I mean, look at, like, if Gage Hecht and Spencer Petrov and, you know, guys like that. We already saw it with Alex Morton, you know, took that approach. And if they did it in a group, you know, I mean, they're able to, even in high school, they're able to finish high school wherever they are. There's so many opportunities to go to school virtually now. I just wonder, and especially with the internet, with everything else, this isn't the 80s when, you know, road racers were trying to race in Europe and they got stuck on this French team and nobody spoke English to them and they were just isolated. I don't think I think it's much easier to make that shift. Of course, it's a huge sacrifice to say, I'm just picking up and leaving and going over here for 3 or 4 months or even longer. But I just wonder if the community and in cycling is now ripe for that, and for that younger generation, for those guys who are like late teens, early 20s, if that's the kind of move if they were to make, then I think we would maybe see a change as far as what success they had on the international field.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, in talking to Jeremy Powers when he retired, he talked about how the new paradigm is you do well here and you go to Europe. Like, that's what you do. You know, so this definitely, with the calendar, like you said, if you have the funding, and we've talked to some athletes who don't necessarily have that funding right now, who making that full trip to Europe is going to be a bit of a challenge. But yeah, I think you're right. And I look at too, on the men's side, you know, cause we've already talked about how good North American women are, but there's a lot of young talent. like a lot. You know, we saw it. I saw it for the first time in that great race in Hartford, and we've seen it play out with any number of these riders have phenomenal seasons over the last couple of years. So like you said, this might, you know, this is a generation that certainly has the chance to do it. Like, there's a lot of talent there.
Yeah, and I think that it's I mean, there's so many bigger questions to be asked about the sport and the future of the sport. And I think it does, you know, what we're seeing with the disappearance of the C1s is it's really bringing these questions to the forefront, is what we expect from elite athletes, what we expect, you know, and it's nothing against the athletes. It's just the format of it as who is good enough to compete as an elite or even a professional athlete in the sport of cyclocross. I mean, you look at Belgium, what are there, like 18 men who have like full-time contracts in the whole country, and that's the mecca of cyclocross. So it can't be something where it's like, okay, these 100 people are going to be able to make a living racing cyclocross. I mean, I think it's, you know, I mean, it's a joke now if more than 5 people in the U.S. make a living racing cyclocross. But I think that the pipe dream that anybody can do it if they just work hard enough is not necessarily true. And I just wonder with how the state of UCI cyclocross is changing in the U.S., if maybe this European format is really the way that we're going to have to go to see success for U.S. racers. And then on top of that, the bigger question is that really that important? Or do we want it to be our own thing? And that's what we've always claimed. I mean, that's my big mantra before, is that, you know, you race cyclocross locally, and then you get to watch the superheroes on TV, you know, and that's kind of, and it's almost like two separate sports. But is that, are we fine with that? Or do we still want to see our athletes have success in Europe? And I think that how things are progressing in the U.S. with cyclocross is kind of putting that into a little more focus, at least for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was kind of like the having this discussion about Europe is the elephant in the room is, you know, we've spent almost an hour now establishing kind of what the state of cyclocross is. Yeah, but at the same time, we've sought to internationalize the sport. We have 2 World Cups here in the U.S. We've said we want to be a part of this broader world scene, well, European scene in like 2 countries. You know, we want to be a part of, though, you know, what's going on at the international level. And so that means having success. And it seems like not as a country, but like, it seems like we've kind of gone down that path to me of we need to, you know, achieving success in Europe is part of being a successful cyclocross racer. Is how I see it right now.
I agree. And, you know, the other thing that we can bring into this, another point that I think you and I are on the same page, that what changes this for the U.S., what changes this for most nations that are not Belgium is the Olympics. And we are seeing this in stark contrast in mountain biking right now. We're seeing it with Kate Courtney and Haley Batten and Chloe Woodruff and these athletes who are fighting for a spot on the Olympic team. They're getting support from their federation. They're getting support from the Olympic committee to be able to perform and have an incentive to perform and have the, you know, governing body behind them, because medals equals money. That if we had that in cyclocross, then that not only brings the focus of the Olympic Committee and Cycling Federation, but it also brings in more sponsors. Olympics means sponsorship money as well in bikes. And it's not the redheaded stepchild cyclocross, but it's a, you know, finger quote, legitimate sport like mountain biking. So I think that's another thing, that if you want this to become a global sport. I didn't always believe this. I really think that it needs to be an Olympic sport.
And you're saying that, is that in large part shaped by the time you've spent around, I mean, because you really did have dived into mountain biking. Does part of that perspective come from that?
World Cup mountain biking is huge. Yeah. I mean, it's just on a whole different scale than cyclocross. And, you know, Matthew Vanderpool aside, since he is, of course, just a special case at whatever he does, I think that the athletes that you see in cross-country mountain biking are the ones who are all around some of the best in the world that are able to more easily make that transition if they want to be road racers via like Cadel Evans and stuff like that in the past, and even on the, you know, Pauline Ferrand-Prevot and many other instances, to going and dabbling in cyclocross and having success there. I mean, look at Yolanda Neff last year. Because I think that draws a much... more people are drawn to that because there's more support for it. There are more kids programs. I mean, we have NICA here. We have the in other countries, it really is just the Olympic program from when they're kids to move them through the ranks. And that doesn't exist in cyclocross. So I think that's something that if that were to change, maybe that would give U.S. athletes more support and the opportunity to actually succeed in Europe.
Yeah, and you've obviously been around that argument much longer than I have, but it seems like it sprouts up, and every time we say, oh, if only we're an Olympic sport. And so, you know, I think it seems like where you're at too, though, is with cyclocross, especially here in the U.S., we have to deal with the reality, is that it doesn't seem like we're going to be an Olympic sport anytime soon. And so it's kind of like making the best of what we have.
Yeah.
And to me, that seems to be... kind of what I've gotten from this conversation in terms of kind of what we need to do moving forward is to be positive, but in thinking about the best ways to deal with the way things are.
So let me put this out here. Let me play my own devil's advocate, which is
okay.
Basically what I do on a daily basis as I sit here on my desk and just contradict myself constantly. One of the things that I've been covering the most closely is this Epic Ride series of mountain biking. If you win just one race, so Jeff Kabush and Katarina Nash both won the backcountry race. No, I'm sorry. Finsterwald won. Kabush got second. So we'll take Finsterwald, and Nash walked away with $5,000 checks for that win. It's not a sanctioned race. It's not a sanctioned series. When they go to Arkansas for the last one in Oz, that winner gets $10,000.
Oh, wow.
And then they have, I think, a huge purse for the series on top of that. So if they win the series, they get another X thousands of dollars. And this goes back to my, what do the points really mean in cyclocross? If something like this appeared and wasn't sanctioned, would people just move to that like they've done in mountain biking? I mean, it's a completely different paradigm. It gets rid of the federation. It gets rid of all of that whole bureaucracy. You don't need a license to race. You don't need anything. You show up. You know, if you and I want to go race in the pro race, we'll go race in the pro race. We'll get our asses kicked. But, you know, it's not like we have to. So I just wonder, it's like, okay, well, cyclocross used to be punk rock, blah, blah, blah. So what if it goes back to that? But what if it has that money behind it somehow, and somebody comes in and is like, oh, well, this format I like. What if Epic Rides decides, okay, we're going to do cyclocross races as well, and raises that money? Do people then just jump ship and say, all right, I don't care about the points anymore, I'm just going to go for the money and make a living? It's like it's a completely different paradigm. It's just something that I was like, well, what's it all for? What's the purpose? Why are you doing this? And I look at the people who are doing these Epic Rides races, and I'm like, well, why are you doing this? And I'm like, well, most of them love racing their bikes. And, you know, some of them are in Europe now and racing sanctioned racing, but for the most part they're concentrating on this series. They're skipping out on cyclocross races to race this because it's a ton more money. So I don't know. It just raises it. These are the things that I wonder about. I don't even know. That's not even a question. I don't even know what to think of it, but it just was going through my head. I was like, well, what if we just did something completely different and didn't worry about Europe, but had this thing where people could actually make a living racing their bikes? But again, I don't know if that's ever going to happen, but it's just a completely different paradigm than what we're used to.
I think touching on Epic Rides, though, I think another reason why that series has been successful is that they've created great events.
Yeah.
And I think that that is something, it's hard to do. Like, I help put on my local race for my team. You put on a UCI race. It's very hard to create events, but they've created an awesome vibe. I saw you tweeting, or perhaps Instagramming, from the Fat Tire Crit about how freaking awesome it was. And they've created a format, frankly, that people love. Like, doing a backcountry race is awesome, especially compared to like XCO racing, which kind of sucks at some time in a lot of places. But you get to kind of, I guess, return to the roots or whatever, but they've created great events. And I think, if we are talking about building cyclocross in the US, I think we need to double down and think long and hard about building events that people want to attend, and that we're going to get people to want to come out for.
And I think that would be
like a correlate what I see from the Epic Rides, and not to mention the money, but they've also been drawing a ton of amateurs.
Yeah, and I think that that's part of it. And I think that one of the driving forces, and we see it in other sports as well. I mean, we saw the reason that we were in Denmark was because the Visitors Bureau wanted to bring people there. And I think Visitors Bureau are huge. I mean, you talk about these Epic Rides races, they're all in these beautiful destinations with thousands of miles of trails to go explore. And I've been to two now where basically city council members have been there telling the pro racers, thank you for coming to our town, buy property here, come visit, vacation. And I think that's kind of their goal. So maybe that's what we need to sort of borrow. I mean, maybe that's the answer, is that that's what we need to borrow for cyclocross. And you talked about the Fat Tire Crit, where it's not only the cyclocross race, but what can you build around that? I mean, is it a gravel ride? Is it some like great destination that you can bring people in? I know other races have tried this, but having a gravel race or having some other kind of, even like a pro crit the night before or something else, and kind of building it out and breaking down what is maybe gotten a little tired as far as what we see as a race weekend for cyclocross, and mixing it up a little bit. And maybe it is for these bigger races to go and find these destinations that visitors bureaus and other folks with money want to pay to get all these people to come to. So I do think that there is some room for some brainstorming to maybe shake things up going forward. I think we have to do something.
No, I think you're right. And I think if the money existed, I think there certainly is a space for a quote-unquote interrupter, like the Epic Rides for cyclocross, the Epic Cross. But no, I think you're right. I think that we have kind of fallen into, it seems like there is a bit of a lull. I've seen it locally too, where it's just like, all right, we put on the race, we have our course, everyone comes, yay, we bitch about blah, 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 that it wasn't better. And it's like, well, what are we doing about making it better? Like, what festivals are we trying to tie it into? What other events are we doing? What other group that normally doesn't come to this race but might be interested are we recruiting? Where are we advertising? It just seems like there's a lot. And that, in this, I guess, this current landscape, is that maybe it's an opportunity to build an event, to make an event that people want to come to. And who knows where it can go from there. So I don't know. Maybe that's the optimist in me. We're looking at this kind of doom and gloom, but maybe there's an opportunity.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I am saying that with a, what can we do to fix it? And maybe in some people's minds, it's not even broken. And it really isn't broken, but maybe improve is the answer. And it's why I like having these conversations with you, Zach. I'm just throwing out there stuff, and that's, I think, that what both of us do. And I hope nobody takes away from this and wants to nail us to the wall saying, well, you said it has to be this. And that's really not what we're doing now. We're trying to have an open conversation and see exactly maybe what can be done, and maybe what are crazy ideas, like, having nationals, U.S. nationals in Europe, that seemed to go over really well.
I like it though. You're willing to stir the pot. I think that's one thing that I've always really, really, really liked about the cyclocross community is that there's so much passion behind it, that there's room to throw ideas out and to arrive at a better place.
Yeah.
By discussing things openly and hopefully respecting other people. But I don't know. I've just always been really impressed by the passion that people have for wanting to make it better. Even in your case with that one, if you're willing to step out on a limb and take a little flack.
it's all good. But yeah, no, and I agree. And I do think there's passion, and there's passion with the road cyclists who always want to yell about it starting too early. And, you know, now we can yell at the mountain bikers for coming over to the U.S. and racing too late, you know, and screwing up our whole schedule by having a World Cup at Snowshoe the same week as Rochester, which is just driving me insane. But yeah, it's all, cycling just never ends, and that's okay. But I think in the end, Zach, is that what we can say confidently is that you and I here tonight, we did it. We solved it. We solved cyclocross. I think I may have said that before, but once again, we have solved cyclocross. So thank you for helping do that.
No, you bet. We solved it. I actually have a lot more questions. Am I allowed to do this?
Yeah.
Like, I have like questions and rethinking, you know, our coverage for this coming year is that wasn't supposed to happen. We were supposed to solve it, right?
Yeah, but it's okay. That's all part of the solution.
Yeah, no, I think it's good. I think, like, as a publication, I draw inspiration from you. I feel like you're always innovating and trying new stuff. I think that's really cool. And, you know, as a friendly competitor.
Yeah, and
I think,
you know,
it's good.
We've said this before. I don't even think of us as competitors at this point. I basically, when I'm doing stuff and I need to see results for races, or I want to see a good recap or what's happening in the world, I go and check out what you're doing. So I don't think that's even, I think we both complement each other as far as the coverage goes.
No, I said that. That was tongue in cheek.
Yeah,
although I guess
was.
You couldn't see that because we're not in the same car together. But no, but I think like pushing the envelope in terms of the narratives we can craft and what we can do in this new, not new world, but, you know, in this coming season, and try to create a coherent narrative and tell that story of the cyclocross season is important. And, you know, I think, you know, we both have a role that we could potentially play. So, yeah, no, it gave me some stuff to think about. And it's always fun to bounce ideas off like that.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the one thing that both of us agree on that will make building that narrative easier for everyone is if all of the, I'm going to just kick myself for saying this word, but I'm going to say it anyway, if all of these stakeholders are able to work together and not feel proprietary over content or everything else. We want to give credit for content, but basically, if we want riders to be able to work with media and sponsors to be able to work with riders and media, and if we all work together, I really think it goes so much farther to getting the message out and building that narrative that we all want. And I'm, you know, I just talk about this a lot on Twitter, but if Zach is writing an article about you or your team, or I'm putting out a video and you see it, even if it's not like the best thing you've ever seen, just share it. If you love cyclocross, if you're a fan of it and you see something, share it. It's huge. It costs nothing. It takes less than a second. Nobody is going to judge you for sharing this or that. And it really, really, really does make a world of difference. And I think that if we can do that in this coming season between amateur racers and media and fans and everyone else out there, just to share each other's content, I think that we're going to have a much more enjoyable season, and one that we can really sink our teeth into some really cool stuff.
Since we've made it to the approximately hour and 15 mark, if anyone's still listening, I'll give some trade secrets. I don't know how much value media coverage from, say, Cyclocross Magazine has. I like to pretend it has some. But, you know, if you do share stuff, we see that. And, you know, if we see that and we as journalists enjoy interacting with you, we may or may not be much more likely to want to write a story about you or help you tell your story. And also, I'm open to tips anytime. You can contact me on Twitter. You can contact me at Zachary@cxmagazine.com. If you have a great story, I will gladly tell it for you. A few weeks ago, Kevin Bouchard Hall, Masters racer, he was like, "Hey, Zach, I have a cool bike and a bunch of pictures of it." I was like, "Boom, write a story." So if that interests you, it's it's really not that hard. You know, Cyclocross Magazine, yeah, we do some journalism, some news, but really our goal is to promote the sport. And, you know, we want to be a vehicle to help athletes do that. But at the same time, there's only so many stories we can chase on our own. So, you know, get in touch. If you've listened this far, you have a good story, pitch me and I'll probably say yes. I don't think I've ever said no.
Awesome. That is good to know.
So,
all right. So just real quick then, Zach, where can people get a hold of you to give you those tips?
To get a hold of me, you can reach me at Zachary, Z-A-C-H-A-R-Y, at cxmagazine.com or news@cxmagazine.com. Or you can tweet at me. I'm the shoe star.
Yes, you are.
Yes, which again is a nickname given to me. It's not because I think I'm like super great or awesome.
You're so Midwest.
See, my last name is Schuster, and then people were like Schuster, and then it was a good Twitter name. It just kind of happened.
Last question for you, Zach, before I let you go. What is it that Giannis has to work on in the offseason, or what is it that the Bucks have to do to make sure that they get beyond the semifinals next year?
Ooh, you break my heart. I don't know. It's funny, you know, people are talking about how why Mike Budenholzer really struggled with Atlanta in the playoffs, and I kind of saw it because he made zero adjustments after game three. Instead just rammed Giannis into the wall.
They figured it out,
didn't
they?
And over and over again. I mean, I would have posted him up. I would have maybe put him in the pick and roll. I don't know, you know, as the screener, but just something else to free him up, because what they were doing was definitely not working.
Yeah, and once Toronto realized that, oh, Kawhi can just stop him, you know, not to mention Gasol, which is a huge body, and everybody else that without those adjustments, they were sort of doomed. It was tough to watch. But
yeah, it was very sad. Also, he can't shoot. No. I mean, that definitely. but no, I mean, it was a fun season.
It was.
I mean, I was hoping they'd win 50 games and they had the best record in the NBA, and they went to game six of the Eastern Conference Finals. So it was fun. But yeah, heartbreaking way to lose. And now we'll probably watch the Warriors just roll over Toronto. Yay.
Yeah, I know. That's going to be interesting. But hey, this has been NBA talk. I will say this. I know that cyclocross folks aren't probably into this, but that is a sport that I used to love and follow so closely and haven't for over a decade. And I just love where that game's going. So if you're looking for fun, something fun to do in your off season, go watch the NBA Finals. There's my hot tip.
Yeah, it's a bummer. I mean, we're kind of late to this, but that could be the Parts Bin? It'd be a Parts Bin episode. Like, ooh. Zach and Bill talk basketball.
I think
why you should care.
I mean, we're putting it out there now. I think we may have to come back and do that soon. So
okay,
look for that, cycling friends. The NBA show. And on that note, speaking of the Parts Bin and all of the other shows on the Wide Angle Podium Podcast Network, you should head over to wideanglepodium.com, sign up, become a member. That's how we get to do these shows and bring you all of this content. You can go, if you aren't sick of listening to me talk about cyclocross, you can go onto the Slow Ride Podcast and listen to me talk about mountain biking. I did a show over with there with those guys this past week. Rebecca Rush, I think, was interviewed by Peter and Molly over on The Consummate Athlete. The Gravel Lock guys have just been crushing it with Jake Wells and Brandon Fix, and just a lot of other great interviews on their show. So that's worth it. Bike Shop CX just dropped another show, so go check out Mr. David Pallon and Scott and all of the things that they are working on in the shop. And support it. We want to keep doing this, but we need your help to do that. You can do it by becoming a member, you can do it by buying the Grim Pure coffee, and you can do it by signing up for life insurance at healthiq.com/WAP. Zach, thanks so much. We'll see you soon.
Dude, That's like an awesome lineup for like a whole month, and you're just mentioning the most recent episodes.
Yeah.
Like, that's impressive.
We're doing good work. Oh,
yeah,
you know what?
Seriously, support it.
Last thing, final thing, heat check. Please go watch some MTB. Go check out the power rankings. It's going to be something similar that we're going to be doing for cyclocross as well. So just head over to youtube.com/CXHairs. If you want to subscribe, that would be awesome. But even if you don't subscribe, just watch the videos and see what's going on in the world of domestic mountain biking.
Right, and of course you have to practice bitching at Bill, like yes. We're all going to do during cyclocross. Just get warm up,
yes.
Start practicing, just start throwing arguments out there, see if they stick. Get in the groove, because come cyclocross season, that's what we're all going to be doing.
I took the world champion who hasn't lost a World Cup this year, and she's not number one in my power rankings.
I know.
So there. All right, Zach. We'll talk to you soon.
Cool. Thanks, Bill.